Welcome to the Evolving Christian Faith Podcast. Where theology and spirituality embrace reason. Listening to the past, but not enslaved to it. Eyes in the future, hearts grounded in the present. Refusing to look back, lest we turn to salt. The radical perspective, it's in the here and now. What is an authoritative reading of Scripture? That's the question on the table for this part two of a three-part series. I'm Bo McGuffey, your host of the Evolving Christian Faith Network, which serves to promote the radical and revisionist perspectives. As a quick recap, in part one, I noted that all readings of texts are interpretations. Some readings deal better with the fact that texts, including biblical texts, are products of their context and that we can never truly know what the authors were intending to say to the readers. Instead, we're left with the struggle of trying to figure out what a text means for us. No longer do we have an authoritative measure that determines what an authoritative reading definitively looks like. And this makes having some sense of an authoritative reading quite difficult. And that's where I bring in Daniel Migliori. In his book, Faith Seeking Understanding, he argues that there are three basic measures that we can use here: the rule of faith, the rule of love, and the rule of hope. I like these measures. I think Migliori's onto something here. And so in this episode, what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to start unpacking these. And as I do, I recognize that this is probably not necessarily where he would want me to take them. And that's perfectly fine, because this is what they mean to me. The first of Migliori's rules or measures of an authoritative interpretation is the rule of faith. Basically, the guiding question here is, does the interpretation lead to one having a greater faith? This one is extremely tricky because how one understands faith is itself a point of contention. I don't believe that faith and belief are the same thing. Fundamentalists do, militant atheists do, and many, many other people of faith do not. I find the theology of Paul Tillich and James Fowler's work on the stages of faith to be a much better understanding of what faith is. So, in accord with Tillich and Fowler, for me, faith is the posture that orients us toward and ties us to our ultimate concern. And ultimate concern is a way that Paul Tillich talks about God for religious people. Although it doesn't necessarily have to be God for religious people, it generally is what we call God. And so, as human beings, our interaction with others can, it not necessarily will, but it can, lead us into identifying with more and more people. And as our circle of those with whom we can identify, those with whom we can empathize, basically, as that circle expands, what's happening is that we're growing into a greater sense of participating in humanity itself. And as a result of this growing and the experiences that drive it, it's natural for the content of our belief systems to change, which in turn has an effect on how our faith manifests in our lives. The faith of a 20-year-old may very well look different than that of a 70-year-old, and it should. Indeed, a healthy and a vital faith will constantly change as one experiences more and more of life and continues that process of growing into a fuller and fuller sense of human identity. And so faith is that which orients us toward our ultimate concern, and a healthy faith continues to evolve. And sometimes it evolves to the point where it looks absolutely nothing like what it did in the past. Perhaps the most important part of all of that is understanding that a healthy faith changes. And therefore, the rule of faith does not mean that if a reading changes someone's beliefs, then it's invalid. Quite the contrary, a good interpretation should challenge you to grow and change your understanding of, well, everything. A faithful interpretation of Scripture should cause you to question your faith. That's what prompts you to grow as a human being and to grow into a deeper and a far more complex faith. So that's the rule of faith. Does the reading challenge you to grow into a deeper, a more encompassing, a more complex faith? The second measure is the rule of love. Ultimately, Christians are called to love God and love neighbor. Nothing else, just love God, love neighbor. It really is that simple to remember, but doing it, it's not really so easy. And so the first issue we run into here is, what does that mean? What does it look like when we love? People do a lot of things to others that they claim to do out of love that, quite frankly, aren't exactly so loving. For example, when a fundamentalist tells someone that they need to accept Jesus or they will burn in hell, they're probably doing that because they genuinely care. It's a conversion that is part of an understanding of tough love. It's an, I know you don't want to hear this, but you need to kind of conversation. Now, I would say that threatening someone with eternal hell in order to coerce a favorable response is flat out spiritual abuse, period. But those who engage in this abusive behavior can't see this as abusive. Because remember, they see this as an act of love. Sometimes people separate the love of God and the love of neighbor in a way that places love of God first, to the detriment of the latter. Take, for example, the treatment of LGBT people. By refusing them the option to marry or hold certain significant positions in churches, they are refusing them equal status as church members and as national citizens. They do this because they believe that the command to love God means that the lifestyle that is deemed theologically damnable is to be forcefully punished. Obviously, the love of neighbor is nowhere to be found in this stance. That is because we have an identifiable order of operations here. Love God begets love of neighbor. Without the love of God being first, there really can't be an appropriate love of neighbor. And so proclaiming the love of God can become, and has become, the justification for doing a lot of nasty things to people. And if you don't believe me on that one, just read a church history book. When I think of the ministry of Jesus as portrayed in the Gospels, which includes the crucifixion, what I get out of the stories is a sense that divine love, love that is from God and loves God, that divine love is not just any kind of love, but it is an other-centered, justice-oriented, and self-giving love. And so, loving God and loving neighbor are two sides of the same coin. So if we say we are proclaiming the love of God by turning a group of people into second-class citizens, then we're living a lie. Without the love of neighbor, there is no love of God. Where there is love between people, however, there is God, because God is love. So to summarize, the rule of love is this. Does the interpretation lead you into living a life of love toward others, and thereby manifesting a love of God in this world? And again, when I say love, I don't mean just any kind of love. I'm talking about a divine love, a love that is other-centered, justice-oriented, and self-giving. It is a love that cares for the neighbor, with whom we can identify. It is a love that gives voice to those who have been silenced. It is a love that embraces and draws in those who have been pushed to the margins. It is a love that cares for and gives consideration to all. And that's where I want to wrap up part two. I will pick up on Migliori's third rule, the rule of hope, next time. And after that, I want to take you where I don't think Migliori would want us to go, which is to identify the source of where I suspect we probably may disagree. So once again, I am Bo McGuffey with the Evolving Christian Faith Network, and until next time, peace.